This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Poetry Foundation, with a reminder that Chicago is the pulse of poetry. Visit the Poetry Foundation on the corner of Superior and Dearborn to explore their library of 40,000 books, attend public events, and view Frente a la Vida, Facing Life, a striking multidisciplinary art exhibition by Chicago artist Victoria Martinez. Learn more at poetryfoundation.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. Inspire change. Shape the future.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is WBEZ's Weekly News Recap. It's August already. Can you believe it? The summer season's flying by, but before you get out this weekend, to make the most of it, we've got to catch you up on the top news stories from the week. Chicago's biggest music festival kicked off.
I feel like Vala is just such an amazing community. Everyone looks out for one another. I think it's just a beautiful place, a beautiful venue.
Last night, Mayor Brandon Johnson was on stage introducing Billie Eilish.
And a former Northwestern football player shared his story.
Ramon Diaz played football for Northwestern in the mid-2000s under now-fired coach Pat Fitzgerald. Diaz, in his 30s now, says he's still affected by the hazing he had to go through while he was on the team.
My experience playing football at Northwestern University haunts me to this day. I never will forget the mistreatment that I experienced for those 4 years.
Here to dive into those headlines and more is Carrie Shepherd, Chicago reporter with Axios. Ramana Hussein, editorial board member and columnist at the Chicago Sun-Times, and Dan Mihalopoulos, WBEZ investigative politics reporter. Now, as you heard there, Lollapalooza has landed at Grant Park. The four-day music festival opened yesterday, and it'll bring about 100,000 additional people downtown each day. Now, in terms of the number of people, it is the biggest event in Chicago. Now, you all had to come downtown to join us here at Navy Pier today. So does the vibe outside feel any different to you?
Yeah, yesterday I felt it the most. I think you can avoid it a little bit where we are. But yesterday I was on the Blue Line and I had to go into the belly of the beast, like right there on Michigan Avenue. I had an appointment there. Mm. And a lot of young people on the Blue Line, a lot of energy. I like it, though. I feel like it. You know, I don't mind all the people coming and, you know, there's a lot of people out and, you know, we consistently hear stories that nobody's coming to Chicago and nobody's downtown.
Yeah.
They're there.
They're here. They're here. What about your commute in, Dan?
You know, look, nothing will make a middle-aged dude feel older than seeing a group of Lala kids at a Metro platform or CTA platform, you know, and then the shorts. You're just like, hey, can I give you some of these Umbros from the 90s that go down to your knees?
You know? That's when you really know.
I'll also add a little bit of my political analysis. I don't know what was more cringy, that shout out there from the stage by the new mayor, or that time when Rahm was catching an act. I think it was at Lala, and somebody got a sneak video of him a few years back, like
dancing.
Basically grinding to a song by I think it was Robin
Thicke.
That's it.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh my God, I've got to go find that video and catch up. Ramana, what was your journey into Navy Pier like today?
You know, I took the CTA and I did not see any Lala kids. I just saw a lot of people coming to Navy Pier. So there were a younger crowd than Lala. And I have to tell you that I used to take when my niece turned 16, that was her birthday present from her parents. And but my older sister told me my younger sister that we had to go with her. So I used to take my niece to Lala for like 5-6 years in a row. And so, yeah, there were a lot of nostalgia bands. So I told her, well, I'm going to go watch The Cure. And so she actually said, but there were a lot of good bands there. But I felt the same way Dan did. I looked at everybody and I'm like, oh my God, everybody looks like they're 12 years old. And some of them look like they're strung out. And then I did look at some of the clothes they're wearing and I'm like, they did not leave the house like that. Their butt cheeks were out of their shorts. And, I mean,
so that's gonna be my daughter's present when she turns 60, not 16.
Speaking of daughters, guess whose daughter is literally on the CTA right now, heading to her first ever Lala. So you bet last night I gave one heck of a pep talk. I had a new portable charger and then a backup to the backup of the portable chargers.
Nice.
She took notes.
We talked sunshine. We talked water. We talked comfortable shoes. We talked outfits. I took photos of her from the front, from the back. I said, go get your glasses. Are those the sunglasses you're wearing tomorrow? Go get them. I want exactly what you're going to look like. I asked her to take a selfie because I'm already at WBEZ and I can't see you when you're walking out the door. And I know how teens can be, and you can sneak and you can lie and you can leave in something that's not what you told me you were going to wear yesterday. So we had the whole discussion.
That's awesome. Is that your main concern? Is it the outfit? Is it the drugs? What is going on?
Well, there's no drug concern with my child, not with the people that she'll be with. My biggest, strategy conversation with her was more so of like, okay, if your phone dies, if your phone gets lost, it's like if you separate, making sure you find a spot, get back together, that kind of thing.
Totally.
So I think she's going to be fine.
Yeah.
And then at the end, I said, have fun.
I totally get it because I told my niece, like one time we split up, she actually had fun with me because I did like some of the bands that she liked, but sometimes she would see someone that I had no interest in and she'd go see her friends. And I had some friends who were there and I told her though, I'm like, if I see you doing anything that I know your parents would not approve of,
totally,
I will tell them. Yeah. I'm not your friend. I told her that. I'm like, I might be cool, but I'm not that cool. And I will definitely go and tell your mom because I'm loyal to your mom and you're not going to be doing anything.
Her parents appreciated that.
Exactly.
I'm sure.
And she's totally someone that wasn't going to be, but she told me to stay away from the electronic music stuff because she told me I would be horrified if I went there.
Oh my gosh.
Because she said I was acting like a mom looking at everybody and being like, oh my God, I was shocked. This was like 10 years ago too.
So well, here's some other business going on around Lala. And some folks are wondering if the music festival had anything to do with the fact that the city decided to move hundreds of migrants out of a downtown police station. What happened, Romana?
Well, so what happened was there were, as we know, there's been a migrant crisis in Chicago for the last couple of months. I think we have about 12,000 migrants that were bused here from other states. And there are migrants living in police stations. And this is a central district police station where the migrants were taken and they were moved over to a temporary shelter in Edgewater.
Mm-hmm.
Brandon Johnson is saying that this was already in the works, that this wasn't something that they necessarily scheduled at the same time that Lollapalooza was happening.
Yeah.
But, some people have concerns. And then, I guess the mayor brought a good point. And it's like, we don't want a lot of these migrants living in a police station because, those conditions aren't the best as we've seen.
No,
too.
Not
that the shelters are going to be like a home or anything like that, but maybe it'll be more conducive. So I can see his argument there. And then as we were joking about Lollapalooza, I'm like, I don't know if the migrants being from another country, do you really want to subject them to the Lala goers? But it is a good...
Might be a shock.
Yeah, it might be a shock to them. But I don't know if it was something that was, I think this could have been planned out. I mean, we're still kind of every day we're hearing about migrants being shifted from one place to another. So it could just be a coincidence, as the mayor's saying.
Well, not only is this going to be a huge weekend for Chicago hotels, Dan, it's also busy for another business. Talking about cannabis.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is kind of like their Black Friday, right? It's just the big day for them to,
for dispensaries.
Yeah. There's a dispensary closest to Grant Park, which is Cresco Labs is the operator of that. And they say this is the biggest weekend of the year for them. Then you have the Verilife dispensary over on West Superior in the River North area. And so they have a parked bus serving as a pop-up smoking lounge during Lala. There have been different things where they've tried to provide transit for people from dispensaries in the past few years since recreational marijuana has been legalized and over to the festival itself. But there's so much traffic that I think, some people, if they just find their own way, if they can still find their way after they've, puff, puff.
So it's clear cannabis at dispensaries in Illinois is very expensive comparatively. Mm-hmm. But they will be getting business from folks from out of state who didn't want to travel maybe with cannabis. So, and it's a
That's right.
supply and demand But if you live here, you might be finding your marijuana in other ways than going to the dispensary.
Well, I want to stick with you, Carrie.
Non-tax, yeah.
You know, speaking of this, we know that the concert goers, some of them, they may end up having a little too much fun, right? Because every year, local emergency rooms, they actually fill with festival mm-hmm. goers
True.
Who have overindulged mm-hmm. on drugs and alcohol. Six medical tents are on site at the concert to help out. But Carrie, you've got a story about another spot where folks can go.
So this is a nonprofit that is from Columbus, Ohio. This couple, they go to arts and music festivals. It's called This Must Be the Place. And they hand out free naloxone. So they've said they're going to bring about 4,500 doses. The idea being that you come up, they give it to you, they'll train you how to use it. There's no reason, you know, why not have it,
yeah.
you know, just in case. And they told me they started this in 2021 because they noticed that a lot of sort of non-opioid users, maybe recreational drug users, were overdosing because fentanyl is so, because of the rise in prevalence of fentanyl cut into other drugs like cocaine and other pills.
Mm-hmm.
And this is especially important in Cook County because I don't know if you guys saw, but, you know, last year mm-hmm. there were 2,000 opioid
That's
overdoses,
right.
which surpassed the previous record in 2021. And, you know, more than 200 of those are young people 20 to 29. And that's mm-hmm. who's going to be mm-hmm. at Lollapalooza. So this is a place to just come. No questions asked. We're going to give this to you. I mean, my husband and I were talking, we should keep this in our car. You know, like there's no reason not to. You know, where
you
we live in the neighborhood, we see people, you know, struggling all the time. And so it's like we should have this
Something
ready
to have
know how
hand.
To use it. Yeah.
Yeah. This is Reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We're going behind the headlines in the weekly news recap with Carrie Shepherd of Axios, WBEZ investigative politics reporter Dan Mihalopoulos, and Ramana Hussein of the Chicago Sun-Times. If you want to chime in on these stories, go ahead and send us a tweet at WBEZ Reset, or you can send an email to reset@wbez.org. We do our best each week to share as many of your comments on the air as possible. So while a lot of young people might get a little wild at Lolla this weekend, there was much more serious activity going on in the South Loop last Sunday. This one involved kids as young as 12, Romana. What happened?
Mm-hmm. So this was in the South Loop. It happened last weekend. There was about 40 young adults that were arrested at the end of it. They were a group of kids. Some were breaking windows. They took merchandise in some stores, and a few of them ended up jumping on the cars and I think fighting amongst each other. And as you mentioned, Sasha, there was arrests, and most, I think about 30 of the arrests were 12 to 17, which was one 12-year-old,
yeah.
and they were 12 to 17. So most of them were very, very young. I think there was a 20-year-old in there, but some of them were also charged with weapons.
Too.
Yeah, there was a UUW in there. So this story just brought up a lot of topics that we've talked on the editorial board. There's been discussion about, you know, a lot of black and brown kids in neighborhoods where they live in, they don't have, you know, these opportunities for them, going downtown is an activity. And, mm-hmm. you know, Brandon Johnson has always talked about this too in the root causes. I think what set a lot of alarm bells off is Brandon Johnson talking to reporters this week, and somebody mentioned the word mob action.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Despite the chaos and a 7-Eleven being looted, Mayor Johnson, I mean, he really did take issue with that reporter characterizing it as mob action. Let's hear it from him.
That's not appropriate. We're not talking about mob actions. I didn't say that. Hold on a second, okay? Respectfully, these large gatherings, just hold on a second, y'all. I promise you, we have time to talk. It's important that we speak of these dynamics in an appropriate way. This is not to obfuscate what is actually taking place.
So, Ramana, I mean, Mayor Johnson's not taken a lot of questions from reporters
yeah.
since becoming mayor in May. What do you think of him scolding the reporter for
so
using that term?
So I think there's a lot of things going on. I think there's a lot of nuance. I think a lot of people do agree that there are a lot of underlying, you know, causes of why these, you know, this is happening. But I think people are we got a letter from the editor, which is in today's paper, and someone said that, you know, Brandon Johnson is being a little like Donald Trump by, you know, using words that, you know, may not be like using, you know, the jibe with a vax. So they're saying like, okay, what did happen. You know, what, you know, there was crime going on. So it's not a trend, because I think what Brandon Johnson was saying was like what's happening is he said to use the word trend instead. Mm. So a lot of people feel like, OK, you're not talking to the media, and then, you know, you're coming out and then, you know, yeah. you're scolding about words. So and then we also he used the word baby Al Capone's.
Yeah, I think during, we have that. I think we have that as well. Let's listen to that.
We have to be very careful when we use language to describe certain behavior. There's history in this city. I mean, to refer to children as like baby Al Capones is not appropriate.
So we actually had a letter writer who was also a teacher, Chicago Public School teacher, just like Brandon Johnson. And he said, I know where Brandon Johnson's coming from, but by him telling us not to stereotype, you know, children, black, you know, maybe black and brown youth, mm-hmm. they're like saying, well, you use that word. And then he kind of wrote a thoughtful letter, and it was interesting.
Interesting.
But I do think there's a lot of good points. We're talking about Lollapalooza. A couple months back, I would say less than a year ago, I did do an editorial, I wrote an editorial about, you know, the need for more activities for youth mm-hmm. in the West and South sides. And one of the things, one of the youth groups, they were pointing out that, you know, Lollapalooza is a mostly white attended festival. Like when you talk about the curfews, a lot of these curfews tend to target black and brown youth. So you have these youth, they're like, oh, here, you can smoke some pot. And you know, a lot of people have these, you know, thoughts like, okay, so if it was a mostly black crowd, would the same sort of dynamics be there? Like, you know, mm-hmm. you know, the open arms. And so I know there was a youth group that was talking about like the yeah. double standards with Lollapalooza and the curfews and like, you know, not adhering to it. And I remember yeah. the mayor, Lori Lightfoot at the time said something like, well, this is completely different. And I know a lot of the youth groups and youth organizations were raising objections to that.
I mean, Dan, what do you think? I mean, as journalists, we know words matter, right?
Of course.
What do you think of the argument that the mayor's making?
Yeah, that's fine. But I mean, the term mob action is not just a reference to the outfit, which we call it in Chicago, yeah. organized crime, the mafia, you know, and some kind of groups of, you know, Southern Europeans that look like me. It's also a term in the law in the state of Illinois. Mob action literally is a term. Now, I don't think that was phrased the right way, perhaps. Mm-hmm. I don't know which reporter is. I'm not trying to pick on anyone. But, you know, I don't think those were the charges that were brought against
yeah. mm-hmm.
These kids and young people. I think, though, the mayor at that point, you know, opened himself up a little bit to a lot of scorn from people on the right that don't like him, you know, to begin with, mostly outside of town. But the larger issue here is, you know, there does start to be a reputation among people from out of town, mm-hmm. Maybe suburbs, maybe out of state. You know, oh, is Chicago downtown, you know, someplace we don't want to go? And so far, I really think that's overblown. I mean, mm-hmm. some of the people that are saying that weren't going to go anyway
yeah,
to downtown
yeah,
Chicago.
Exactly.
They want to
yeah.
stay in their bubble, which is fine for them, I guess. And other people are coming, you know, tourism is at an all-time yep. high. I think it was interesting the way he handled it. It was a very interesting news conference overall a couple
yeah.
days ago.
Well, here's what I'm wondering, Carrie. Is Mayor Johnson, you think, risking more backlash here for not calling out these young people for criminal behavior?
Not necessarily. To Dan's point, I mean, people who have not been supporters of Johnson and maybe said that he hasn't supported the police enough had already had their ideas about him.
Yeah.
He did say, to be clear, he did say there was a quote about him saying, you know, police practiced restraint. Mm-hmm. This could have been much worse.
Actually, let's listen to that as well. He was praising police for how they reacted on Sunday.
To the best of their ability, I believe that they attempted to engage with our young people, with community partners, giving as much warning as they possibly could. And, you know, unfortunately, arrests, you know, were made, and unfortunately, some damage was caused. And the level of sensitivity and patience that our officers expressed, I'm appreciative of that.
Sensitivity and patience, Carrie.
Yeah, and I mean, I think Romano mentioned this. This is a really important point. Brandon Johnson was a teacher, and he wasn't just a teacher anywhere. He was a teacher in mostly black and brown neighborhoods, mm-hmm. especially that are, you know, face a lot, like Cabrini Green, for example, the very well-known housing project. So he was surrounded by young black and brown kids who get sort of called, you know, various things that maybe young white kids don't, and they get labeled in certain ways that maybe isn't entirely fair. Mm-hmm. But we should say, and I think this got a little undercovered, one of the, and I'm not sure if this is the same exact same period, but there just a few days ago, one of the, an older office security officer who was at like the Roosevelt, you know, movie theater area, he died after, you know, he was after some of these attacks. So it wasn't like it was just property damage. You know, I think, to be fair, Johnson's press conference was before that came out. But there are actually, big consequences to this.
Mm-hmm. Mayor Johnson didn't receive the police union's support during his campaign. So is he trying to get off to a good start and maybe establish trust?
Look, it's a funny thing about being the mayor. You can run with or without the support of the police. And I think two things happen once you get in. Mm-hmm. Now they're your police.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Now
yeah.
you're in charge of them. Now criticism of them is criticism of you. The other thing, by the same token, he came in without the police's support, as you pointed out. They wanted Paul Vallis in that runoff. They wanted him badly. And now you have some of them. You know, seem to like his interim superintendent, Fred Waller. They seem to be very defensive of him. Mm-hmm. Is that something that Brandon Johnson wants? I mean, his claim is that morale has improved a lot since he went in. And I don't know that there's any way to quantify that, because ultimately it does seem that the police always turn against every mayor. That's just another truism.
Another week, another handful of lawsuits filed against Northwestern University. It's remarkable, really, how regular this is becoming. Ramana, tell us about the latest charges against the university.
I believe there's like 14 lawsuits altogether. And Ramon Diaz, he was the one that the Northwestern Daily had profiled in the second story that they wrote, kind of opening a can of worms, or not can of worms, but basically shedding light on this problem. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the latest allegations are, you know, about what Ramon Diaz faced, which we heard a little bit about in the Northwestern Daily story. But, you know, he talked a little bit more about the fact that he said that he was basically sat down and his teammates had carved Cinco de Mayo in the back of his head. I think they shaved it in the back of his head. He said that a coach had made some sort of comment about, we don't sleep on the floors like your dad did in Mexico. We don't do that around here. He made sort of comments about that. I think the day before there was more commentary about a young black man who had his afro, you know, cut off. Then, you know, we're also hearing about watermelon eating contest that was held at the Kenosha, Wisconsin facility, which I don't think they're using anymore because I think a lot of the hazing happened there. And then we're repeatedly hearing about this car wash, like the sexualized hazing that took place in the locker room. So I think we're hearing there's definitely some themes that are, you know, coming back with a lot of these allegations. Mm-hmm. We're hearing a lot of, you know, racial comments. We're hearing, the sexualized hazing. So mm-hmm. I think there's kind of a pattern, but I just feel like every time I open the paper, there's like a new lawsuit. And, you know, these are Ramon Diaz is, I think they said, was the oldest. And he's 36 years old, which is still pretty young. So a lot of these players.
Yeah. Years ago.
Yeah. And so a lot of these players have played recently. So and I think it does. I don't think, you know, hazing and, you know, racism, I don't think this is like particular to Northwestern. This is probably a problem that's happening. And, you know, I think a lot of people are bringing up the fact that Northwestern, you know, had this internal investigation and they have not said anything about it.
Well, you know, larger problem. And you know, as Ramana said, Dan, at least at last count, we've got 14 athletes, former athletes, suing the university. I mean, do you think that this is going to force a larger conversation about culture around sports, you know, a Me Too movement of sorts for athletes?
Yeah, in Evanston and at Northwestern, but that started a long time ago. Yeah. I mean, Penn State, the U.S. Gymnastics, Larry Nassar, the doctor, over in Indianapolis. I mean, all of these things have been in the air and in the news and in the courts for several years, and it's just been a public relations disaster for Northwestern. It seems like it's their turn in the Me Too movement, and it's a reckoning. And you see these things, you talk about them being around for many years in all of these situations that we cover. you know, somewhat analogous was a Chicago Park District lifeguards a couple of years ago, and the lifeguards at the public beaches in Evanston that are on either side of the Northwestern campus. So it's virtually saturated our culture.
Yeah, I mean, this falls a lot, especially with football, with sports. You know, this is something, there's a lot of boys will be boys and sports are sports. But then you're starting to hear more stories of like, well, this didn't go on at my school. So let's not say this is just how it goes. To Dan's point about reckoning, let's be clear. Assault, all of this is not new. And even people coming forward is not new. What is a little newer and a little refreshing is people are starting to pay a little attention to those people who come forward because they were silenced for a very long time.
Yeah.
There have always been people who spoke up about workplace, about sexual assault, about stuff happening. There's always been some sort of whistleblower, but now people maybe are paying attention, but there's probably a lot that aren't being listened to as well.
Ramona, you wrote a recent op-ed. This was about your brother's sports experiences. It was very personal. Do you mind sharing?
Yeah, sure. I mean, my brother, I was telling him I was going to write this, and he's like, well, I didn't deal with what the what these kids at Northwestern did, you know, the allegations that were out there. But I just remember him when he was playing high school sports and he was playing football. He only played for about a year. I remember my dad not really wanting him to play because of, you know, the nature of the sport, but he wanted to try it out and he did it for about a year. But I remember he came up to me, I'm 5 years older, and he's like, yeah, you know, there was him and another Indian kid on the team and the coach called him 7 and he called the other one 11. And I mean, I'm laughing about it because my brother laughed about it. And, you know, this was because of the stereotype of the Indian convenience store owner. And I remember at the time I told him, like, you know, that's really racist. He shouldn't be calling you that. And, you know, he's like, oh, you know, it's funny. And this is one of the things that I noticed when I was reading the Daily Northwestern about Ramon Diaz. He said that he used to laugh a lot of this stuff off. And I think what we're hearing, I mean, we hear about women, we hear about people of color, we laugh a lot of things off and we're like, oh, it's just a joke. But it does, you know, then like a couple of years later, my brother on Facebook, I remember like this was like 10 years ago, he had a little Facebook post and it kind of opened a can of worms and people talking about their experiences on a sports team and the commentary they heard. These are all people of color. And my brother's like, you know, at the time, I thought it was funny. But now looking back, it was totally inappropriate. And so I think even with a lot of these cases with these Northwestern kids, it's like, you know, we talk about that car wash hazing ritual and you're like, you know, for someone like me, I'm like, that does not sound normal. And like, they're, you know, these kids probably want to participate because they don't want to seem like they're being quote unquote bad sports.
Right. Or they're on scholarship.
Exactly. Yeah. And so they look back and they're like, that was totally wrong. And, you know, they start processing it later. And that, I think that's what happened with my brother. So when I heard about this Northwestern things, I mean, obviously what happened to him is like, you know, nothing compared to like what these other players face. But it's kind of the culture. And I do think sports is like a microcosm of our bigger culture. There's racism in our culture.
Yeah, absolutely.
And but I feel like sports is a little more leeway. And I think there's this thinking that just because there's a lot of black athletes, like it's a totally safe space for black, you know, black, you know, that's just this commentary that happened. You look at the NFL, I'm like Colin Kaepernick, you know, and it's not true. Just because there's a lot of black and brown bodies or like people, it doesn't mean that it's a safe space for them. So
but
I think that's one thing people
should.
Black
and brown leadership.
Exactly.
Ramona, I was saying, talking to Ramona before, I really enjoyed her column about her brother, but something you said that is really sticks with me about this is that this happens with a lot, and Dan, you've seen this in your reporting of survivors of abuse and assault. Is, well, mine wasn't that bad. Well, I didn't have that.
Exactly.
It's okay.
Yeah, it's true.
It's okay. And then you start to process it. And also that's something with trauma. You know, you push it down, and then something triggers it.
Yeah.
But, you know,
it starts with the laughing it off.
Yeah,
yes.
And it's
nervous
a lot
laugh.
Of like, well, that mine wasn't that bad, you know? And it's like, well, if it made you really uncomfortable and ostracized you,
it
was bad. Yeah,
because
totally.
he was telling me, he's like, well, it's dumb. You know, I told him I was going to write about it. And he's just like, he's like, well, this is nothing compared. And I go, of course, I'm not saying that, but there are different levels. And the fact that he even said, he goes, the fact that I'm thinking about it 27 years later shows you that. He said that later. Like, we were talking about it.
And those little subtle ones, those are the ones that happen all the time.
Exactly.
That, again,
exactly.
Brush.
Yeah.
Yeah. Carrie, these lawsuits keep coming. Northwestern's hired now a former U.S. Attorney General to review the culture, as we've been talking about, at the university. Any more details so far?
I mean, I still have a lot of questions on what Loretta Lynch is going to unveil that Maggie Hickey didn't already. They've already done this an investigation into this. last fall. And Maggie Hickey's no slouch. She's the monitor of the CBD consent decree. This is someone who knows how to investigate wrongdoing. And so bringing Loretta Lynch in, I was reading, you know, on Northwestern's whatever, you know, what they said she's going to do is like monitor the locker room. Well, I'm not sure how authentically students might be and athletes might be behaving if there's someone monitoring their locker room. Yeah,
but it's practically a ritual thing with all of these scandals at this point to bring in a former Fed of great renown from other investigations in the public sector. And it's like it can't be over until that's happened. Yeah. So, I don't know if they're going to release the report. That's another thing. I mean, it's a private university. We don't have the same access to their records that we do when scandals like this hit public bodies.
It's an about face for the Board of Trustees that, like, no, we're taking this seriously. Mm-hmm. Look, we got, you know, Loretta Lynch.
Yeah, well, you know, as we talk about Northwestern hiring a big name lawyer, we also recently found out who the Chicago Park District's new top lawyer is going to be. Dan?
All roads lead to Heavenston with our stories today. there's a lawyer named Nick Cummings. He was the corporation counsel for the city of Evanston, and he's been recruited to come to the Chicago Park District, which, as we mentioned before, has had their own scandals with sexual abuse, assault, harassment, general culture of abuse. And, they pick him, the head of the Park District, Rosa Escareño, who replaced the superintendent that presided over the scandal, who Rosa Escareño was brought in by then Mayor Lightfoot to clean the situation up, says, "We've thoroughly vetted Nick Cummings. We've thoroughly vetted our new general counsel." She said that about a month ago to our friend Fran Spielman on her podcast for the Sun-Times. And lo and behold, we learned that Nick Cummings is a defendant together with the city of Evanston and a former city manager in a lawsuit by his former deputy, saying that he's black, but his deputy, but she accuses him of saying racial slurs in the workplace. And we went into a lot of detail about that in our story, but there's a lot of questions about how thoroughly this vetting really was.
Okay.
You know, they've been able to produce no real proof that they did anything but just kind of interview him.
I want to turn to something very different. Carrie, roughly 200 workers at Loretto Hospital on the West Side, they're on strike. What are they asking for?
More money, as usually strikes are about. And these are not nurses. This is sort of med. I think this is folks who work maybe in the cafeteria and food services. Okay. This is assistants.
Better working conditions too, right?
Technicians. Yes, better working conditions. They get Loretto workers, and the SEIU, who represents them, says they make below industry standard, and also that's led to, as we've seen in the healthcare industry, Kristen Shore, our colleague, has done a ton of great reporting on this, the massive turnover. And she actually uncovered that because of being understaffed at Loretto, which is to be clear, a West Side safety net hospital in Austin. So someone died in the emergency room because there was just not enough staff, and there wasn't, you know, they weren't triaging in the emergency room. So these conditions are, you know, they're saying, look, we're not, our condition, we're striking, and there aren't enough of us, and that's turnover is going to continue. And I was trying to look up before of like where the next closest safety net hospital is.
Yeah. What'd you find?
Well, I didn't get very far.
I would bring Kristen Shore. To be fair,
you were doing this during our 2-minute
break.
Yes,
I was. Yeah. I was texting with Kristen Shore. But I would say, I mean, probably West Humboldt maybe close because it's Austin. But, you know, and safety net hospitals are for folks who don't have insurance and don't have access to other medical care, and they have to kind of take everyone. So, you know, that's a vulnerable population already, that then if the people who are working to treat this population aren't also feeling like they're being treated right, it's a bad combination. And let's not forget Loretto got in a lot of trouble last year because Block Club reported that their administrations had done some terrible.
Was that last year?
It's been a couple years ago.
When I first got to Chicago.
During the
pandemic with COVID.
They were giving judges and
2021, I believe.
People.
Yeah. Yeah. We're expecting Mayor Johnson might announce his pick for police superintendent next week.
Might.
We're almost there? Yeah?
You know, earlier this week, when he did have a news conference that we were discussing before, he was like, hey, if I rushed into this decision and, you know, because you guys want me to make a decision, you and the media or the public, then you might criticize that decision. I mean, he's been in office for nearly 3 months. We've had an interim superintendent.
Yes.
And Fred Waller. And, you know, he's not in the mix. He's not one of the three finalists that were passed on last month by this civilian panel. Mm-hmm. So the mayor is supposed to pick from these three. Yeah. And the expectation it's going to be, you know, sooner than later, yeah. Finally.
Well, meanwhile, we're getting new information about Chicago's interim superintendent, Waller. Fill us in.
Yeah, new old information. Well, when he was picked to be the interim superintendent on May 3rd, 2 days later, I filed a Freedom of Information Act request for all 58 of his misconduct files.
58?
Yeah, that's a fairly high number. There are apples and oranges within there, so it's hard to just judge it by the number. But there were all these complaints. So oddly enough, when somebody has so many misconduct files, and he has more than I think probably 90% of the CPD, he comes out of retirement. And we looked at his record. I think it's a normal thing to do. Mm-hmm. Chicago police has really dragged its feet on producing these records, and they are voluminous. Just like last Friday, we get one from 1994 where his then wife accused him of domestic violence, of hitting her, which he denied, and she stopped cooperating from the investigation, and the internal investigation pretty much ended quickly. Mm-hmm. And then the mayor defends him when we ask him about this story, and another story comes out, this one with a file that Southside Weekly and Invisible Institute got about another domestic violence accusation in 2006. So now we have multiple cases that have surfaced, and we still don't have all of those 58 files. Mm.
The same wife, same partner?
No, different woman.
Different woman, okay. Yeah.
Different woman many years later.
Well, you know, Romana, I want your thoughts, because 58 complaints in a 34-year career. Is that typical to
you?
Pretty standard?
Dan would probably know better than I would, but from what I mean, there are some police officers who have more complaints than others. I usually think that they're in the hundreds, I'm like, that's a lot. But 58, like Dan said, it's apples and oranges. Like, what do some of the complaints say? What, mm-hmm. like, how severe are some of the complaints?
Yeah.
Because there could be a complaint that could be horrible, like horrific, like one complaint, and somebody could have like 12, and they could be like more minor complaints. So it depends on what they are. But I do think the domestic violence issues do raise, you know, questions about it. And we all know that he was disciplined for making a rape comment when there were some police personnel that were shifted from one area to another. Mm-hmm. I think he said that you guys are raping us.
He said, grope me, don't rape me.
He
apologized, yeah. but this was just a few years ago.
Yeah, and in the domestic violence case, you know, he said, you know, that they both ended up, he said that we both ended up like scuffling on the floor, fighting over a telephone. Right. And then there were marks on his ex-wife's, like, I think neck, and it's a part of her body. So I think these are good questions to raise. And like Dan said, like, you know, she didn't end up cooperating, but it was resolved pretty quickly. So these are questions that we have. I mean, yeah. we've always, like, you know, just in the past couple, like, year or two, like, you know, we're hearing about investigations of people who had ties with, like, right-wing extreme groups, mm-hmm. like the Proud Boys, and we hear about how the investigation went, and then there's all these holes in the investigation, and then you wonder, like, in 1994, like, how thorough did these investigations take? Like, you know, once the ex-wife didn't want to cooperate, then what happened? And then, you know, she filed for divorce like right after that.
Also, let's be clear that when you are in a relationship with a police officer and you file you call the police, that can run into issues in that you sense maybe you won't necessarily be listened to. I'm not saying that's what happened here, but there are reports and have been in the past that especially police officer families have higher rates of domestic violence. I think it's completely fair, as we all would agree, that every leader of all our city departments, no matter what, should be held to a higher standard of character.
Yeah.
And also be setting an example for all of whom he, you know, represents and leads.
I'll just add that Mayor Johnson, who ran on a platform that had many, many bullet points about helping domestic violence survivors, you know, he really defended Waller the other day when we asked him about it at a news conference, and has praised his record overall, as we mentioned earlier in the program, yeah, for raising morale and coming out of retirement to spend his summer heading the CPD and augmenting his pension, as has been reported as well.
Let's stick with a police issue here and quickly touch on this, because we've had three armed robberies of mail carriers in the last few days, one in West Suburban Berwyn, one in Chicago's Northwest Side, Kilburn Park neighborhood, where the carrier was actually shot. Mm-hmm. And minutes later, a carrier in Logan Square was robbed. Why are mail carriers being robbed, Carrie?
I don't know. This is frightening. I didn't know about this until you all sent me this story, and it makes me very concerned for my own mail carrier who I see, mm-hmm, but who is also often parks his truck and then just leaves the
door
the
opens.
Doors open and kind of roams around. And you know, that's frightening. And then the other, I was wondering as I was reading the story, like, is this just random? Why are they targeting mail carriers of all people?
They're taking their master keys,
right?
Yeah, and that they use to unlock the mailboxes,
right?
Yeah,
and
which I think happened in our case. Our building was robbed about a month ago,
wow,
and we found out that access was from the master key. And we didn't. For some reason, we didn't feel like it was our mail carrier that was sort of just being shady.
I see.
Now with this story, I'm like, maybe
he was
got robbed.
Yeah, because they can scrub checks.
Yeah, that's what I think it is, like scrubbing checks. My mom actually. So I think what they do is, because a lot of people send like birthday gifts. Like my mom sent my cousin's daughter like a $200, like maybe a couple months back, and she ended up she didn't use the special pen, but someone basically interfered and they wrote a check for $30,000. So they, you know, it was like this whole process. So we at the Sun Times did a story about how these washing of checks is become like a bigger and bigger problem. So that's just my theory. Yeah. I could be wrong, because why would you just take a bag of mail? You know, you rob someone and take a bag
that's
of mail.
Crazy.
So I'm just thinking that, you know, people are sending checks like for birthdays, you know, people, you know, to their relatives and loved ones across the country. So that's what I'm thinking. Yeah, gift cards are really
the biggest danger was dogs biting them.
Yeah,
not anymore.
They can't redline, you know, they're not like cabbies, you know. They have to go everywhere.
Well, the U.S. Postal Service is offering $50,000 as a reward for information on that Berwyn robbery that I mentioned. This weekend, it's going to be a hot one for anyone that's hoping to go for a swim, though, at their local Chicago, you know, park indoor pool. Bad news. Tell us quickly what it is, Dan. What's happening?
Yeah, I mean, it's happening all over the country, and it has happened for a long time. It's just a simple fact that there's not enough lifeguards.
Not enough lifeguards. So the indoor pools in this city, they're going to close for a month while the lifeguards get posted at beaches.
Yeah. I mean, they have to prioritize when they don't have enough people to cover.
But I like the indoor pools.
Well, you know, yeah, there are days that are not beach days. But
go to the Y, Sasha.
Pretty nice
lately. You know what, Carrie?
No, I mean,
that's not why you pay your property tax.
Yeah, exactly. It's disappointing because, I mean, the pools, the outdoor pools were a little later, if I recall, opening. So, yeah.
It feels a little... Well, speaking of this heat, anyone actually going to Lala? I mean, we joked about it earlier.
I know someone whose daughter, you know, just like you, I have someone who's a mother. And she's like, I'm just thinking I'm going to go watch some Michael Jackson Broadway show while I wait
really
for her to come back.
It really seems to have shifted, though, Ramona, to that younger generation. That this is their deal now. Right?
I feel like the crowd is younger and younger. I have to tell you, like I was talking to you about how I used to take my niece, who's like in her late 20s now, but she kind of outgrew Lollapalooza at 18. She's like, oh, God, this is like so tired. And I said, and then her brother, he used to come along and he was like 12. He could get in free. And then even he like aged out at 14.
Okay.
He's
music to my ears.
So,
trust
so
me.
I think
because she's about to be 17. So really, I just have to go through this maybe one more time.
My friend was saying, I hope she doesn't like it and then doesn't want to go again. She goes, this is so expensive.
It's expensive.
You know, it's expensive.
Yeah.
You know
expensive.
What I mean? It's really expensive. And a lot of the kids aren't even from Chicago. That's one of the things that I noticed, because I remember like one time, like these kids didn't know like some of the ethnic food that was being sold at one of the food courts. And
what,
I was like,
they didn't know Euros?
It was samosas. He didn't know what a samosa was.
Okay,
and I was like,
so Lala might not be your thing. You can check out the Bronzeville Jazz Festival, a bunch of other things. Westtown's got a Dancing in the Streets event. Chicago's only classical music street fest is also this weekend.
In Ravenswood, yeah.
Thirsty Ears.
From Access Contemporary Music. Yeah, I saw that they were having a little mini silent film fest too, which I think would probably mean that there's going to be live soundtracks. I always enjoy that.
There's plenty to do, not just Lala. All right, we'll leave it there. That's it for the weekly news recap. My thanks to Ramana Hussein of the Chicago Sun-Times, Carrie Shepherd of Axios, and Dan Mihalopoulos of WBEZ.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
This episode of Reset was produced by Andrea Guthman, and it was edited by Andrew Merriweather and Dan Tucker. Catch the recap and every episode of Reset by subscribing to our podcast. Tomorrow, we'll share our interview with two bakers sharing their secrets for the perfect chocolate chip cookie. You don't want to miss that. That's all for this Friday. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Have a great weekend.